This is the Stella Culinary School Podcast, Episode 2, Stocks, the Foundation of Great Cuisine. This is a Stella Culinary School Podcast, found online at stellaculinary.com. My name's Jacob. Thank you once again for joining me for this great, great podcast that I have scheduled for you today. Because today we are talking all about stocks. And this is actually going to be broken up into a two-part episode because I want to make sure that I'm extremely thorough and detailed on the art and technique of stock making. Because it is such an important and integral part in modern day cooking. And it's one of those basic skills that every great chef needs to master, most definitely. And just to give you an idea, the word stock in French is fond, which basically translates into foundation. And the French, they had such an influence on modern day cuisine. And if they call stocks their foundation, basically their root, their rock for modern day cooking. It just shows you the importance that a well-made stock has in your kitchen. If you can't make a great stock, then you're going to have a hard time making great soups and great sauces, and you're really, really going to be at a disadvantage to other people who have this technique mastered. But fear not, that's what these next two episodes are all about. In today's episode, we're going to concentrate exclusively on how to make a veal stock and the technique behind it, because it is a little bit more of an intensive process and it is the most difficult stock to make. Once you master the technique for veal stock, we're going to move on in episode 3 into poultry stock, some vegetable stocks, and also some flavored broths. But before we get into that, let's talk real quick about what makes a stock and a broth and their defining aspects. So in today's discussion segment, we're going to talk a little bit about what makes a stock, and also what's a broth and what's a fumet. They're all very commonly related terms, and the line does sometimes get blurry. Now, anytime you have a blurry definition line, one of the things that I recommend is you go out and you consult your food lover's companion. Now, if you don't have a food lover's companion, I really highly recommend that you buy one. It's basically the dictionary for the culinary world. So anytime you hear a term thrown around and you're not sure exactly how to define it, this is going to be your go-to book. So when you're talking about the difference between a stock and a broth, basically a stock is a strained liquid that is the result of cooking vegetables, meat, or fish, and other seasoning ingredients in water. Now the key term there, or the key word, is strained, because when you take a look at the definition for broth, a broth results from cooking vegetables, meat, or fish in water. The term is often synonymously used with bouillon. So basically, a stock is a broth until it is strained. Once your broth is strained, then it becomes a stock. And that's just, splitting hairs, but you get that question a lot. A lot of people ask it over on the forum, so I just want to take this time right now to define those two different terms. Also, another great resource that I highly recommend you use is On Food and Cooking by Harold McGee, and this is just, one of the seminal works in the culinary world, and everyone should have a copy of this book on their shelf, especially if you're really into cooking. And on page 599, I'm quoting now, he says, "The word stock, as it's applied in the kitchen, reflects the professional cook's approach to sauce making. It derives from an old Germanic root meaning tree trunk and has more than 60 relating meanings revolving around the idea of basic materials, sources, and supplies. It's thus the culinary application of a very general term and was first used in the 18th century. Much more specific and ancient is broth, which goes back to 1000 CE, and a Germanic root brew, meaning to prepare by boiling, and the material so prepared, both it and the boiling liquid. Bouillon and brew are related terms." So, just to give you a little definitions there. Also, to you'll commonly hear that the difference between a stock and a broth is that broth is more generally simmered with meat only, and a stock is more generally just bones only. And the important difference, which we're going to jump more into in a little bit, is that bones contain more gelatin than meat. So if you want a nice light broth or a nice light stock, then you would just boil or simmer only the flesh of the animal and no bones, because as that extraction takes place and as your stock reduces down, that gelatin is going to concentrate and thicken a little bit. So that's also a common variation on the definition of stock versus broth. Also, too, a term that you hear thrown around quite often is the term fumé. Now, a fumé is nothing more than an intensely flavored stock, usually used when describing fish and vegetable stocks. And you'll especially hear like a mushroom fumé or a fish fumé as the most common applications of the term. Now, the reason why you don't really hear it with, say, a veal fumé is because to intensify the flavor of a veal stock, you usually take your veal stock and you reduce it down. Well, there's different terms for the reduction phases of a veal stock so you can get credit for it. So, for example, if you take a veal stock and you reduce it down by half, it then becomes a demi-glace. Well, that also means that your veal stock is now twice as expensive at your cost because you're getting half the yield. So instead of calling it a fumé, you want to get proper credit for that expensive stock that you made, so you call it a demi-glace. Now, if you take that stock and you reduce it even more by about to 10 to 25% of its original volume, you get a very, very sticky sort of thick sauce called a glace de viande, which is then used to enrich other sauces. But before we can talk about reduction sauces and glace de viandes and all that good stuff, we really need to talk about how to make a veal stock. So in today's technique segment, like I alluded to before, we're going to talk exclusively about veal stock, because once you have a handle on this, then you're going to be able to make a really, really great stock no matter what your flavor or your base material is. So to simplify it down a stock, let's talk about the three classical building blocks of any stock, including a veal stock. And the three classical building blocks are bones, aromatics, and water. We're going to expand on this a little bit more, and we're going to talk specifically about the veal stock. So for a veal stock, you want to use veal bones, and don't get this mixed up with beef bones, because beef bones come from a much older animal. They kind of have this, this funky sort of barnyard off sort of sweaty, meaty flavor to it. And, you know, some people are into the sweaty cow flavor, and that's fine, but it's going to limit what you can do with that finished stock. So you always want to make sure that you're requesting veal bones from your purveyor. And I always get veal knuckle bones, because regular bones are made up of around, say, about 20% collagen. Now, veal knuckle bones, which are most commonly used in to make stock, are made up of about 40% collagen. Now, what is collagen and why is it so important? Well, collagen, simply put, is made up of three individual protein strands that bind together as a triple helix. Now, don't let those eyes glaze over. I mean, I'm just, you know, this is just a very simple definition, okay? Remember back in high school science class, the whole triple helix and all the winding? It's just think of three strands basically twisted together. Now, collagen provides mechanical strength to animals' connective tissue, but most importantly, as far as we're concerned, when collagen is heated, the bonds of the triple helix are weakened, leaving us with three individual protein strands, better known as gelatin. Now, this is the same type of gelatin that you use to set popular desserts such as, you know, Jell-O and panna cotta, not to mention old school techniques like Aspix. But gelatin is what's responsible for a stock thickening during reduction. So the more you reduce a stock, the more concentrated the gelatin becomes, and the thicker the stock becomes in return. Now, that's important because when you're doing a reduction sauce, if you don't have enough gelatin in your stock as you're reducing it down to make it a sauce, it will never thicken properly for you. And once it does thicken, your yield is going to be so low, you're really just going to be throwing money out the window. Now, a little side note, the longer you allow a stock and or a sauce to simmer, the more broken down the gelatin molecules will become, which will degrade their thickening power somewhat. Now, with veal stock, only about 20% of the total gelatin contained within veal knuckle bones is extracted after simmering for 8 hours. But gelatin, however, doesn't carry much flavor molecules, so to really have a full-flavored stock, some chefs will add some roasted meat scraps to impart a more rounded flavor. Now, one of the issues that I commonly get on the forum is that people have a hard time finding veal bones. Now, the reason is because butchery is basically a lost art, and there's a little bit of a movement to come back to our roots and have that local butcher shop. But, I mean, even that, you know, about 20, 30 years ago, you go to your local supermarket and you'd be like, hey, my good man, you know, put aside some veal bones for me after you, you know, you finish breaking down that side of beef. Now, the problem is the butcher shops very, very rarely ever get in what are called primal cuts, which are the large cuts of the animal, because those require heavy-duty saws and equipment to break down, which basically means you have a higher risk of people injuring themselves on the job, and so your insurance costs more. And so because of all that, they just make it a much safer work environment by just not ordering those whole sides of beef. And instead, they're ordering in almost prefabricated cuts that just the butcher shop has to trim up and vacuum seal and, you know, put out for display. So it's very, very hard for a lot of people to go out and actually find veal bones. Now, you can still try your local supermarket because chances are they have a purveyor that they can contact that will ship them veal bones. But usually the smallest amount that they'll ship is about, you know, 50 pounds. So it comes in 50-pound cases. So that can be problematic because that's going to make a good amount of veal stock for you. Another good option that you have is, you know, go sweet talk one of the local chefs at a good restaurant that you know is making their own stock and be like, hey, look, you know, I understand you're making your own veal stock. The next time you make a batch, would it be possible for me to buy 5 or 10 pounds of bones off of you? And for the most part, it shouldn't be an issue. Along those same lines, if you live in the Reno, Tahoe area, you can actually come to Stella in Truckee and just let me know if you want to buy some veal bones from me, put it on my next order, and I'll kick you down some veal bones. It's not a big deal. So now that you have a better understanding of the first building block of veal bones and the veal stock, next let's talk about the aromatics. And the aromatics are basically there to add a nice round flavor to your stock. And the main function is to really give it a nice full body. And it's because just basically when you simmer bones by themselves, you're going to have a very one-dimensional sort of flavor. So you're going to add some aromatics. Now, most classically is mirepoix, which is very, very important. And mirepoix is nothing more than a 2-to-1-to-1 ratio of onions, carrots, and celery. So for every 2 parts of onions, you're going to have 1 part carrot and 1 part celery. Very, very simple. And this is added to the stock to basically give it a nice full body and full flavor. Now, this doesn't mean that this is exclusively all you can add as far as vegetables are concerned, but these are the classical vegetables that you do add for a certain aroma and add a nice round body to your stock. Now, the next portion of aromatics is the sachet. And a sachet is basically, it'll typically, think of like a homemade tea bag, right? But you're using a cheesecloth and a string to tie it together. And it usually contains a bay leaf or two, some sprigs of thyme, 10 to 15 black peppercorns, 1 or 2 cloves, and some parsley stems. Now, I usually don't use a sachet. I mean, I use these aromatics and the parsley and the thyme and all that. But for me, to go through the process of basically using a sachet, it just doesn't make any sense, because when I'm making a stock, I'm just going to strain it all out anyways. So, you know, why tie it all up in a neat little baggie? Also, I think people are a little bit too modest with the amount of a sachet materials or ingredients they actually add to their stock. You know, I don't want a couple sprigs of thyme in my demi. I want a full bunch of thyme. You know, I don't want just parsley stems. I want the whole piece of parsley, usually about half a bunch to a bunch. You know, so that's just a personal preference that I've come across after making lots and lots of stock. So I would encourage you, and this is kind of just a base rule for this podcast and the website and my teaching and instruction in general, is I would encourage you to take the classical techniques and the techniques that I'm teaching you for what they're worth, but as you get more comfortable with them, you know, go ahead and tweak them to your own flavor profile and preferences. Now, the third and final component is water. Now, you want enough water to cover your bones by about 3 to 4 inches, and, you know, this basically water is water, except for, you know, check your water quality. The only concern is that if you live in an area that has really hard water, which means it's mineral dense, then as your stock or sauce reduces, it could, you know, concentrate that mineral flavor, which is going to give you sort of an off metal taste to your stock. So if you're finding that an issue, then you either should, you know, go out and get a water softener or you know, one of those water purifiers that you can just screw to your tap, or you can just go and buy a couple gallons of purified water from your local supermarket. So now that we understand the basic three building blocks of a stock, let's talk more about actually how to make a stock and the process for making it. So the first thing when you're making a veal stock is you have to answer the question, do I want white or roasted? Now, white veal stock is an old school technique that you don't really see a lot anymore. But it's mainly used for aspic sauces, such as veal velouté or some soups, where you don't want that rich roasted color. You want a nice white looking stock. And the way that you make sure you have that nice white stock is you're going to first take your veal bones before you start the stock making process. You're going to rinse them thoroughly under cold water to remove any excess blood or gunk. Now, then you're going to place the bones in an appropriate sized pot and cover with cold water. You're going to bring this water to a boil, pull off, and proceed to making your stock. Now, this blanching stage basically removes the bone surface junk. And yes, it is an official culinary term. But what it's doing is it's coagulating some of the surface proteins on the bones, and this will keep the stock from becoming cloudy, something that you would definitely want to avoid, more for a visual appeal than anything else. Now, not to sound too harsh, but for me, white veal stock is basically useless. Okay, there I said it. I mean, someone had to say it. You know, it's kind of a useless. I mean, look, if I'm going to spend the money on veal stock or veal bones to make veal stock with, I want to make sure that I'm really extracting all that flavor. I'm getting a very, very full flavored stock, because it's not a cheap stock to make. So why would I take my beautiful veal bones and purposely make my stock taste bland, which is what a white veal stock is? The purpose of a white veal stock is to be bland so it's not overbearing. You know, I may as well, instead, you know, I would much rather use a vegetable stock or maybe even a white poultry stock, but never a white veal stock. And that's just my personal opinion. So in culinary schools, they're still going to teach you how to make a white veal stock because it's very classic. But for me, I would never make a white veal stock ever. And that's just me. You know, who knows? Maybe I'm crazy. So for a roasted veal stock, what you're going to do is you're going to just take your veal bones and you're going to rub them with a good neutral oil like canola oil or grapeseed oil. Now, the reason why you would use a neutral oil is because you don't want to impart any extra flavor onto those bones. You're using that oil because of its ability to conduct heat more evenly and thoroughly. And you're going to roast these bones in a hot oven about 400 to 500 degrees, which is about 204 to 260 degrees Celsius for my Celsius-loving friends. Now, the fact that I rub my bones with oil is kind of a contentious point. A lot of people, you know, they say, well, but that's going to add a bunch of fat to your stock and yada, yada, yada. And, you know, a good stock should have, you know, no fat in it and, you know, blah, 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 yah, yah, yah. But see, my thing is no matter what, your veal bones are always going to have some fat in them, you know, so you're always going to have to go back and defat your stock, and you're always going to have to go back and skim your stock. So if my stock's going to have fat in it anyways, and I have to skim it out anyways, then why not add a little bit more fat at the beginning by rubbing my bones with it to get a nice, darker, richer roasting and a better color and a better flavor, because I'm going to have to defat my stock anyways. So that's just my take on it. So if you don't want to rub your bones with oil, then c'est la vie. But, you know, I rub them with oil because I get a much better looking color and a much more thorough roasting on my bones. Now, while your bones are roasting in the oven, now is the time to start cutting up your mirepoix. Now, how much mirepoix do you need? Well, for every 5 pounds of veal bones, you are going to need 1 pound of mirepoix. Pretty simple, huh? So what I like to do is I like to rough chop these into about, you know, 2-inch chunks. I'll take a large yellow onion and maybe cut it into quarters or into eighths. And I always leave the skin on. I don't peel my carrots. I don't peel my onions. It adds more sort of, you know, rounded rustic flavor. And I, you know, in the ratio of, you know, the carrot skins and the onion skins to the onions and the carrots themselves, it really kind of rounds out that flavor. And I like it. So if you, I don't ever recommend you peel your mirepoix for your stocks, but if for whatever reason you want to, feel more than welcome to go ahead. So at a 5-to-1 ratio, if you're using 10 pounds of veal bones to make veal stock, you're going to need 2 pounds of mirepoix. You know, do that rough cut in about 2-inch chunks, and you're going to throw it in a mixing bowl. And what I'll do is when I pull my bones out of the oven and after they're nice and well coated, and you will have to, you know, rotate your bones occasionally to get a nice even roasting on them. But once they're done, I'm going to remove those bones into my stock pot. And then I'm going to take the oil that has released into the bottom of the pan, and I'm going to pour that oil over my mirepoix or that fat, because a lot of that fat is extracted from the veal bones itself, so it has that nice veal flavor, and I don't want to waste that. And I'm going to toss my mirepoix around in that veal fat. I'm going to lay it back out on the same roasting tray or sheet tray. I'm going to throw it back in my oven, and I'm going to roast them until they're a nice dark golden brown. Now, two optional steps that I like to incorporate, but they are optional and you don't have to, is when I pull my veal bones out and rotate them, and they're nice and golden brown, I like to take my veal bones and rub them with a little bit of tomato paste, throw them back in the oven, and allow that tomato paste to caramelize a little bit. And that's going to help add a nice caramelized color to my veal stock and also a little touch of sweetness. Now, this addition of tomato paste will also help your stock thicken as it reduces, not to mention that roasted tomato paste and veal bones is just yummy. And a second thing that you want to do is you always want to deglaze your roasting pan. So after you roast your veal bones and you roast your mirepoix and you have that combined in your stock pot, you want to take your roasting pan and put it on your stovetop and you want to deglaze it. And all this means is you're going to heat that pan with your burners and you're going to pour in some sort of liquid. Now, I like to use red wine for my liquid. And you will scrape it with a wooden spoon or a wooden spatula to get all those stuck little nummies off the bottom of that pan, because it's going to add, again, more flavor and more color to your stock. Now, for whatever reason, if you don't want to use red wine or if you don't have it lying around, just a little bit of water is fine. And you can use that to scrape off all those little nummies and to deglaze your pan. But the important thing to take away is that you definitely want to deglaze your roasting pan, because if you don't, you're going to be leaving a lot of flavor behind on that pan. Now, once you have your bones and your roasted mirepoix in your stock pot, it is time to cover them with cold water. And you always want to use cold water. And you're going to cover it with about 3 to 4 inches above your ingredients. Now, there is a little bit of a debate over whether or not you should use cold water or hot water. And people are like, oh, well, you know, cold water, that's just old culinary dogma. And my stock comes to a simmer much faster if I use warm water. Well, first of all, it's not dogma, because if it was, I would tell you. But second of all, stock isn't one of those processes where you want to cut corners, all right? So adding hot water to your stock is just, in my opinion, it's a cop-out, okay? You got to set aside the time in your day to make a stock properly. If you don't have the time, then don't make the stock. Just go buy it, okay? Because it's the little tiny details that are going to make your stock really, really good and add that personal touch. So I believe that the cold water has definite merit. Because I ran my own tests on it. But don't take, you know, poor little Jacob's word for it. Take the man himself. Take Harold McGee's word for it. I mean, this guy, he knows his food science. And Harold says, and I quote, "The cold start and slow heating allow the soluble proteins to escape the solids and coagulate slowly, forming large aggregates that either rise to the surface and are easily skimmed off or settle onto the sides and bottom." A hot start produces many separate and tiny protein particles that remain suspended and cloud the stock. So if you add hot water to your stock and then bring it to a simmer, you're just going to have a cloudy stock. And it's going to look gray and it's going to look kind of funky. Now, if the visual appeal isn't important to you, if you don't care about that sort of stuff, then by all means, I guess you can add hot water. But if you're doing this in a professional kitchen, you really need to start with a cold water, with a cold start, and slowly bring that stock to a simmer. Now, as you're bringing that stock to a simmer, now's the time to add in your sachet ingredients, such as your peppercorns, your thyme, your bay leaf, parsley stems, whatever you have that you want to actually add in to sort of round out those flavors like we talked about before. Now, as your stock comes to that simmer, you're going to notice that those large aggregates that Mr. McGee is talking about are going to start floating to the top of your stock in the form of sort of this kind of bubbly protein froth. And so you want to start skimming that stuff off, and you're going to have a little bit of residual fat that comes to the top as well. And the way that you skim is you just simply take a large ladle and you gently dip the edge of that ladle just below the surface of the liquid, because basically the fat and the protein is going to float on top of the water. And then so it's going to be able to, you're going to be able to extract and skim off all that fat and protein that's floating on the top without actually losing any of that stock. And in the initial skimming phase, if you get a little bit of the water and along with your skim, it's not a big deal because you haven't had too much flavor extraction yet. You can always go back and add a little bit more water. Later on, though, when you're doing your final skimming, you want to be much more careful not to waste that stock and just very gently, again, take that edge of your ladle and just kind of break that surface and skim off just the fat and that little protein bubbles by themselves. Now, another thing too that a lot of people do is they think that they need to constantly just like, you know, stand over their stock and skim, skim, skim. What I find though that's most efficient and works best for me is I'll do that initial skimming. As soon as my stock comes to a simmer, I'll, you know, start skimming it to reduce the amount of that frothy protein and the fat that's on top. And then I'll pretty much let it simmer. And when I get ready to strain it, then I'll come back and I'll skim off all the fat that's released from the bones and a little bit, you know, any of that other junk that's float to the top. And that's pretty much it, because you're going to always have a little bit of residual fat left over that's going to float to the top during the cooling process anyways after you strain the stock and all that good stuff. Now, a little trick to help with the skimming process is once you have your stock to a simmer, you're going to pull your stock about halfway off the burner. And what's going to happen is you're going to get sort of this convection cycle where the heat rises on the side with the flame, and it's going to bring to the surface any sort of fat or gunk. And then the cold stock, as it cools, is going to drop back down on the other side where there's no flame, leaving the fat and the gunk on one side of your pot. And it's going to collect there. It's going to be a lot more easy to skim. So that's just a little skimming tip for you. So when we talk about simmering a stock, you want to make sure that you're setting your flame so that just a couple of little bubbles are percolating up and breaking the surface here and there. You definitely don't want a rolling boil. And you want a nice, nice, slow simmer, because number one, a rolling boil is going to emulsify any of that junk or that fat we're talking about skimming. It's going to emulsify that into your stock and make your stock cloudy and kind of give it a little bit of an off taste. But also it's going to lead to not quite as full of a flavor extraction. But also at a rolling boil, your stock may reduce down too quickly, which is going to lead to you adding more water, and it's just going to throw off the whole process. So you always want to have a nice, slow simmer. And you want to simmer your veal stock for about 8 to 12 hours. Anything more than that, you kind of start to lose some of the more subtle flavor compounds. And you want to keep your stock simple, especially if you're making for a restaurant kitchen. So, for example, a lot of common food allergies are out there. You know, so I mean, people are commonly allergic to garlic and all other sorts of stuff. But really, your stock is your foundation. And you're going to split your stock up, especially in a professional kitchen. You're going to split it up. And you're going to make, you know, soup with one batch and, you know, sauce with another, and maybe three different kinds of sauces with your veal stock. So you want to add those additional flavoring ingredients towards the end of your sauce making process or in your soups when you actually go and make that, instead of adding it to your sauce. Again, your sauce is going to be your base. So for me, I like to keep it simple. A little bit of a mirepoix, a little bit of a sachet, a little bit of red wine, and that's about it. You know, call it done. Now, after your stock has simmered for about 8 to 12 hours, it's now time to strain it. And so what you want to do is you want to pass it through a large conical strainer and then a small mesh strainer. Now, the large conical strainer is called a China cap, and it's going to basically get out all the bigger material, such as the bones and the chunks of mirepoix and all that stuff. And you're going to take that then strain liquid and pass it through what's called a chinois, which is nothing more than a fine mesh strainer. And that's going to take out all the more fine particulate matter and give you that nice clean stock. Because again, when you're going to make a stock, like a sauce or a soup with that finished stock, you don't want that particulate matter floating around and clouding it up, and also it's going to give it a little bit of a off mouth feel. Now, you then want to take this stock and you want to plunge it into an ice bath. And you can just fill your sink with some ice and some water. And the trick is you want to make sure you cool that stock down to below room temperature within 2 hours, then put it in your fridge and make sure it comes down to refrigeration temperature within another 2 hours. Because anything more than 4 hours is called time temperature abuse. Basically, what time temperature abuse says is that anything above 40 degrees Fahrenheit and below 135 degrees Fahrenheit, or above 5 degrees Celsius and below 57 degrees Celsius, that's the perfect range temperature for bacteria to start multiplying and forming. So to make sure that your stock stays at safe levels for consumption, you just want to make sure that you cool it off in a timely fashion. So really the rule of thumb is you want it to go after you strain it, when it's still about at 180, 85 degrees, you want to drop that down to below the temperature for time temperature abuse, taking no longer than 4 hours to drop below that temperature. Now, very common in a restaurant kitchen, we will then take those veal bones that we strained off and we'll add them back to our stock pot with a little bit of fresh mirepoix, cover it with water again, and then simmer it again overnight for about another 12 hours. Now, this is called a remillage, and it's basically a second pull of the bones. And you can use this second running or this second pull to either start your next veal stock, or it's just basically a lighter flavored stock that you can use for, say, a light sauce application or a light soup application. Or you can also reduce it down and then combine it with your veal stock to reinforce it. So the remillage is going to allow you to extract some more gelatin from the bones, some more flavors, and really get your money's worth on those bones. And I really only do a remillage for a veal stock. I don't really find that it has much of an advantage if you do it with like a chicken or a duck stock. All right, so before we get into our culinary quick tip, just a couple of announcements for you. I actually do have some videos in the show notes, so head on over to stellaculinary.com and check out the episode 2 show notes. And what I do is actually, at Stella, I make my veal stock by roasting it in our wood-burning oven. So I have a very, very intensive tutorial on making a roasted veal stock, and you can see the process of roasting it in a wood fire as well. But obviously, you know, most people don't have wood fires, and you can just substitute that for roasting in a 500-degree oven. But it's a very, very in-depth tutorial on how to make a roasted veal stock, including how to skim it and strain it and then make your remillage. And also for next episode, we will have a chicken stock video, which is going to show you how to go through the process of making a roasted chicken stock. And the cool thing is this is actually the process of us making chicken stock in the Stella Culinary Kitchen, which we then use to make our sauces and our soups that we then serve to our customers. Now, since we are covering so much information in both this episode and next episode, including the video tutorials that I'm talking about, and also there's going to be a quiz for you to go and test your knowledge, I'm going to put it all on one page that's easy to find. So if you need more information on stocks, go to stellaculinary.com/stock, STOCK, singular, stellaculinary.com/stock. So in today's culinary quick tip, I'm going to give you a little tip on how to actually utilize your stock a little bit better and how to store it long term. So say you made a nice, beautiful veal stock, and you in turn went and made a reduction sauce with it or a pan sauce or, say, a soup with it, but you have a little bit left over. Well, a great thing that you can do with that is you can then take your veal stock and you can reduce it down to about the amount that would fit into a normal ice cube tray. And then you're going to pour your veal stock into your ice cube tray, and you're going to freeze it in your freezer. Now, once they're nice and frozen in solid ice cubes, go ahead and pop them out, place them in a Ziploc baggie, and put them back into your freezer. Now, this is great because the next time you're making a soup or a sauce, you can just grab those ice cubes directly from the freezer, pop them into the pan, and it'll reinforce that beautiful veal flavor into your pan sauce or soup. And that's it for this episode of the Stella Culinary School Podcast. Make sure you tune in next time where we do stocks part two. We're going to discuss poultry, fish, and vegetable stock. Also, if you'd like to take the stocks quiz, questions, comments, all that good stuff, and recipes, head on over to stellaculinary.com/stock. You can Twitter me at Chef Jacob. And until next time, this is Jacob with the Stella Culinary School Podcast, reminding you to always cook with passion.